It's Marketplace Tech for Thursday the 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Google began its I.O. Developers Conference yesterday, and it was all about artificial intelligence of a kind. Sundar Pichai hit the I.O. stage for the first time with a new title, Company CEO.
So we are pushing ourselves really hard so that Google is evolving and staying a step ahead of our users.
Google representatives unveiled a competitor to Amazon's Alexa, Google Home, a piece of hardware that sits in your house and lets you ask it questions, send messages, and shop. A lot to go through, so let's get help from Nathan Olivares-Giles, covering Google I.O. for the Wall Street Journal. We caught up with him among the ocean of tech journalists milling around there. Hi, Nathan. Let's start with Allo.
Yeah, Allo is this new messaging app that Google is going to release later this summer for both Android phones and the iPhone. It's mobile only. It doesn't have a desktop counterpart just yet. But basically, it's going to be a text app that hopefully, Google is hoping anyways, you'll use to talk to your friends. But the most important part, really, is that it's going to be the introduction for a revamped and kind of more smart version of Google's personal assistant.
Yeah, and can you give me an example of how it might work?
Yeah, so let's say that you and I are texting back and forth and we're trying to decide on where to eat dinner tonight. Google will basically be in the background watching that conversation, and then it might make some suggestions saying, oh, for dinner, here are restaurants nearby. And then if you tap on its little prompt, it'll give you some suggestions straight from its Google.com search results. And then let's say that you choose something that you and I agree on it as we're texting back and forth in this conversation. It might then offer to make a reservation for us.
There was also a lot of conversation about privacy from the company this year.
Yeah, basically, if Google's going to pull this off and basically be in the background of your life all the time, they really need to sell people on the idea that you can really, really trust Google. Now, lots of us already do. A ton of us rely on, you know, Google for search or Gmail for email and think, you know, calendar. But this is a whole new level of intimacy and information. So they really, really went out of their way to say, hey, you can trust us and we're going to protect your security and your privacy. So one example is the new version of Android, Android N, that's going to come out later this year, is going to have encryption down to every specific file on phones, which is something they've never done before.
Nathan Olivares-Giles is covering Google I.O. for the Wall Street Journal. Nathan, thanks for talking with me.
My pleasure.
And here's a big picture idea to note. The company announced a function that allows the user to easily click on a link and head to a part of an app, even if they haven't downloaded that app to their phone. Sounds weird, but here's why it's important. Google's moneymaker is the web, because that's how it tracks you and serves you ads. If you are in an app, you're probably not on the mobile web. Making those borders more porous helps Google keep tabs on users and thus keep making money. Hey, thanks for listening to Marketplace Tech. We give you the context you need to understand the business of technology and how it matters to you. Some context on us: we are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. Your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled this month thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org. Today, Pew Research has put out a survey on the adoption of sharing or gig economy services around the country. Findings? We talk about these companies all the time in the tech world, but it turns out there are a lot of places and communities where Uber, Airbnb, and the rest are far from common. Aaron Smith is Associate Director with Pew Research Center and has been researching this. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
What's the sense that you have now about how many Americans are using these services and what the age and education breakdown is?
So the big picture takeaway from this study is that these services are really impacting consumers to widely varying degrees. So on one end of the spectrum, about one in five Americans have deeply integrated these services into their lives. So they use a large number of them. They feel very positively about them and their benefits. A larger number of Americans kind of exist on the fringes of the sharing economy.
Are we talking about urban versus non-urban areas? Are we talking about age? What are we talking about?
Sharing economy users tend to be a relatively upscale bunch. They tend to be relatively young. And as you mentioned, they do tend to be concentrated in urban areas.
Are we seeing a kind of digital divide of sorts here where people who could potentially benefit from these new kinds of services aren't accessing them?
So at least at the moment, that's a little bit how it's playing out. One of the things that'll be interesting to track moving forward is how the adoption curve develops for a lot of these services and whether they become more broadly available in the years to come.
Can we lay any of that at the feet of the companies that actually build these services and where and how they build them?
One factor that comes into play here is geographic scope. For many of these services, it just doesn't make economic sense at the moment to have, for instance, ride-hailing drivers driving around in relatively unpopulated areas, since it's probably going to be very difficult for them to find someone to pick up.
Aaron, I know you looked at crowdfunding as well. Can you talk a little bit about what projects you found that were the most successful?
So about 1 in 5 Americans has contributed to a crowdfunded online fundraising project.
That seems high.
It does seem a little high at first. And what we actually found is that crowdfunding has become a sort of digital tip jar or digital collection plate. So that was actually the number one most widely used type of donation that people gave to these crowdfunding platforms.
Aaron Smith, he's Associate Director with Pew Research Center. Aaron, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much.
And someone who shall remain nameless admitted to me this week that even though he wasn't sure it would be good, he was going to see the Warcraft movie. Brand loyalty for video game films can be strong. When Mortal Kombat, the movie, came out, it did very well in the box office. So how would you feel about a movie version of this? Yep, true. A movie based on the block-building game Tetris. And though it was announced last year, the coming movie, billed as a sci-fi thriller, has secured funding, $80 million, according to the website Deadline. Here's a question. Which block shape was your favorite? I was a big fan of the tall L-shaped block formation. Tweet me your favorite. I'm at the Brock Johnson. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.